Today's show was scheduled to be published on Sunday, Valentine's Day, February the 14th, 2021. And it didn't happen. Power outages, internet outages, snowfall, subarctic temperatures in Dallas-Fort Worth. Yeah, life kind of got in the way. I think we're, I don't know that we've set records, but it's been the coldest that it's been in at least 30 years here in North Central Texas. So apologies for the delay in today's show. And as Paul Harvey would say, now you know the rest of the story. You're listening to Leaning Toward Wisdom, the podcast, Modern Tales of an Ancient Pursuit. It's episode 5, season 2021. Welcome inside the Yellow Studio. My name is Randy Cantrell. I am your host here. The website is leaningtowardwisdom.com. Coming to you from a frigid Dallas-Fort Worth, Texas. Our high today is 19. We're headed down toward 8. That's not common. Not common at all for us here in Dallas, Texas. Today we're asking, man, wouldn't it be great if it weren't this cold? And that's today's title. Wouldn't it be great if? I stare out the window. No, not today. I'm hearkening back. Trees have dropped all their leaves. Fall fell. Now it's winter. Well, now today it's, man, it is deep into winter. I'm in North Central Texas, so it isn't quite what it would be to you guys who live in Canada or Minnesota or Maine, at least not normally. Today it is. Got 2 inches of snow on the ground and it's still snowing. And it's just crazy. It is completely crazy. You probably saw in the news this week, actually this past week in Fort Worth. And I mean, what was it? 100 car pileup. It was just insanity. I think so far the death toll on that crash is 6. They've identified 5, but it is winter. It is winter. And I'm sitting here and I'm looking out the window on this particular occasion and I'm craving a change of scenery. You know, not just the kind that nature provides, but the kind that puts your head into a clearer space. So away we go. My wife and I, we go to a spot that we often frequent. It's about a half day away by car. So that's not bad. Piney Woods affect me in the most positive way. And one of these days I'll do an episode about Piney Woods and maybe why they hold such an allure for me. And here I am. I'm sitting on the covered back porch with an overhead radiant heater because it's chilly on this particular day, but I'm comfortable and I'm staring at a golf course. Particularly, I'm staring at the 6th hole of a golf course. I've got a clear shot of the tee boxes and the green. It's almost a straight on view, which allows me to track the balls that the golfers hit off the tee. Well, I better clarify. When they can hit it reasonably straight, it doesn't appear to be that long of a hole. I'm not a golfer, so I don't know a whole lot about these things, but this has got to be under 150 yards from tee box to the hole. And it doesn't look like it's a long shot. I've been here before. In fact, back last summer, I was here before. Didn't need a heater then. In fact, didn't need flannel shirts either. Didn't need wool socks and all the stuff that I've now got. And it was then, during the summer, when I told my wife, I could spend quite a lot of time here. And she immediately responded, yeah, I could too. And it was then that we engaged these dreaming wheels that we have in our head. You've got them. They're not really just dreaming wheels, though. I mean, they're more like pondering wheels that are searching for this path forward, trying to work out some way to make this thing happen. You daydream. You imagine what it might be like to be in your favorite place. Maybe for you that's a beach, maybe it's a mountain, maybe it's a lakeside. Your mind drifts. It drifts. It drifts to your life and where you're at versus where you most would like to be. Some success that isn't yet realized. Some achievement unrealized. Your lifestyle, the lifestyle that you don't currently enjoy, but you think you might like to. And so you ask yourself the same question that you have been asking most of your life. Wouldn't it be great if we had a lake house? Wouldn't it be great if our business were twice as big? Wouldn't it be great if we got a new car? Wouldn't it be great if we got married? It's a question we ask ourselves about anything, everything, like a can of lighter fluid on your wildest dreams. We can engage these parts of our brain that, it feels like we've neglected these parts of our brain maybe for too long. We easily embrace it and we go with the flow of imagining. Just imagine what it might be like if this hypothetical, if it were real. Wouldn't it be great if, you'll never say, no, it wouldn't be great. Because your mind is always thinking, yes, it would be great. Because it's during these times in our head that we work things out so everything just works out beautifully. No snags, no problems, no downsides, no negative consequences. We do the same thing with the choices that we didn't make, but the ones that we kind of think we wish we would have. Because we assume that the choice that we didn't make, we assume that, that would have worked out marvelously. We never do think, it's a good thing I didn't take that other path. Because that would have been an absolute disaster. Because in our head, the choice that we didn't make, it would have worked out just fine. Maybe even perfectly fine. Might have even been terrific. We look back and we think, what if we'd made that other choice? And so again, in our heads, we iron out all these outcomes so that they're frankly, they're better than the ones that we made. The reality is we only know the outcomes of the choices we made. Had we made a different choice, we think we know how it would have worked out, but we really don't know. We project a successful outcome, though, in our minds, and it feels real, doesn't it? Of course it does. It feels very real, and it can prompt us to regret the choice that we did make, maybe, or at the least, it makes us wonder, if that other choice might have been better. Fact is, maybe it would be great. But it's reasonable to assume maybe it would also be a disaster, and maybe it wouldn't have mattered. We're only going to know if we pursue it. So it makes sense that our brains would gravitate to the best case scenario. I mean, why not think the best? Why not think, wouldn't it be great if, fill in the blank? I mean, isn't that better than, wouldn't it be awful if, fill in the blank? So I'm sitting here, I'm looking out over this golf course, the number 6 hole, and there are piney woods across the way. And off to my right, there are chipmunks. There are these gray squirrels. There are small birds that are scurrying about in the morning cold. They're foraging for food. I'm pondering life, and here these creatures, they are trying to sustain life, and up walk a couple of small, youthful deer. They, too, have emerged from the woods. They're foraging. No thought about tomorrow, I don't suppose. I mean, from the looks of it, they don't even appear to be too bothered by what's going to happen later today. talk about a lesson of being present in the present. All you got to do is just sit around and watch the creatures of nature. Well, here's what I'm not thinking in this moment. Here's what I'm not saying to myself. Wouldn't it be awful? Wouldn't it be awful if we had a place like this? People would think I'm the king of pessimism if that were the case. And I realize that some people are the king of pessimism. Some people do just have such a dour outlook on life. They lean toward always thinking the worst. But I suspect even the most pessimistic people I don't know this to be true, but I just, you have to think it, right? The most pessimistic people surely dream about some ideal outcome, at least occasionally. I sure hope so, for their sake. It's a real gift. It's a real blessing that we are able to see and feel what great success might be like, that we are able to see, feel, and experience as though it were real, our best outcome. No guarantees that we're going to achieve it, mind you. But those thoughts, I mean, don't they inspire you? I would hope so. For the past few years, well, for much longer than that, but for the past few years, there's a particular, I've had this long fascination with buskers. I talked about it last week in that interview that I did with Frank, and Frank is a bit of a online busker. He's not on a street. He's in his house in the UK busking. But for the last number of years, I have watched regularly video and the various videos of a Scottish busker named Natasha Cook Jenkins. She began busking, playing music on the street, when she was 12. She was 12. She's now 20. But when she was 17, a record producer noticed her, and her persistence got her into the Institute of Contemporary Arts in London, and that's where she lives today. Well, there's a video. I'm going to embed it over at the website, leaningtowardwisdom.com. I watched this video. Yeah, I watched this video more regularly than just about any other busking video, and I do it because the camera shows us what she is seeing while she's performing. Not many people. And it's a produced video. But be that as it may, I don't know. I'm fascinated by, here's this young woman singing for all she's worth, and there's just not many people watching her. You know, other busking videos, most frequently they'll show folks that are just going on about their daily lives. They're just, there's a particular guitarist who plays up in Vancouver, and I love the titles of his videos because they're just snarky as all get out. But here's a guy who's just absolutely, I mean, the guy's incredibly, incredibly good at playing the guitar. And yeah, people are just, they're not paying him any mind at all. And you frequently see that. You most frequently see that. And I'm talking about buskers that are really, really good. People just oblivious, just ignoring this person. Or worse, I think one reason I so love busking, and I have since I was a teenager, is because of the courage. Man, just the courage and the determination that it must take to do it. And the optimism of these performers, the optimism that, well, I guess the first optimism is that they're going to make a few bucks, but optimism that people will notice, optimism that they'll get some positive attention, optimism that, you know, people will appreciate their craft, and certainly optimism that it just might lead to something a bit more stable, something better. The most famous busker, doesn't it have to be Ed Sheeran? Sure, I mean, I don't think that. There are a lot of famous artists who began busking. Well, Jimmy Buffett, and, you know, he's just, I mean, man, he's been printing money for decades. So, but the most famous busker to me is Ed Sheeran, because he did it for so long, and he did it in a day and age where we can see his busking videos still. I don't know that I've ever seen a video of Jimmy Buffett back when he was busking in the Gulf States. New Orleans in particular. But when you watch Ed Sheeran, I mean, doesn't it show that he earned his chops on the streets? He confesses that he learned showmanship by busking, trying to get people's attention, trying to keep it, from the streets to the subways to Wembley Stadium. I mean, come on, there you go. And multiple consecutive nights of filling Wembley Stadium. I mean, proof that extraordinary talent and stone cold determination can result in something just insanely successful. All I need is extraordinary talent and stone cold determination, and I too could I'm not saying I could make it in music, but wouldn't it be great? Yeah. Wouldn't it be great if I had extraordinary talent and stone cold determination? Yeah, of course it would. There's a documentary, Ed Sheeran, In My Own Words. And in that documentary, he puts a focus where you might not would expect him to put a focus. Here, listen to this clip.
I wouldn't class myself as talented. I think you have to work for talent. You have to, I couldn't really play guitar or sing, and I learned how to do both, and like couldn't really write a song, and then I learned how to do it. I think it's all, but I think persistence is worth more than talent. Like work rate and persistence. Like I came to London and was not the best singer-songwriter or the best like performer in the scene that I was in. And even at the time where I got signed, I probably wasn't the best. But the more and more you work at something, you give yourself no choice but to get better.
Indeed, you have to work at it. Persistence. You give yourself no choice but to get better. It was Abraham Lincoln who said, always bear in mind that your own resolution to succeed is more important than any one thing. Sir Winston Churchill said, continuous effort, not strength of intelligence, is the key to unlocking our potential. Well, let's focus on what Ed Sheeran said about getting better. And I'm thinking about this because the other day I heard a girl say that she most wanted to be, quote, social media famous. And yeah, come on, that had to spark the what if question. And I instantly thought, okay, what if you were social media famous? I mean, would that be you getting better? Maybe. Maybe not. Hulu has an ABC News documentary on OnlyFans. OnlyFans is this social media website made famous by porn stars, and it's touted as an X-rated version of Instagram. Now, some of us think quite a lot of Instagram is already pornographic, but no matter what your point of view might be about such things, better. The word better is too subjective, and better is too relative, I think, for many people. Better for whom? It's often asked. Maybe you get up at 5 a.m. every morning to go grind away at a very physically hard job for very modest pay. In 2019, the median income for an American worker was just over $31,000. And in 2020, the majority of American households earned less than $70,000 combined household income. Mostly people putting in the time to earn their paycheck, doing work that's, well, worthy to be paid for, but not likely work that's terribly glamorous, mostly mundane, average in every way. And a woman desiring to be an influencer can focus on the fame, focus on the money, and wonder, what if I were a major Instagram influencer? Nobody knows her name. Nobody knows her face. Nobody knows her body. So enter OnlyFans, a platform where she can become a sex worker by taking off her clothes and having ordinary fans subscribe by paying a monthly amount. She gets to keep 80% of the money while the platform keeps the remaining 20%, and so she begins to take nude photos of herself and some videos as well. She's going to be a big star. She's going to make lots of money. Is she getting better? No. She's giving herself options other than making herself better. She is contributing to the worst of humanity. The selfish, the vanity that can carry any of us into this pit from which we might never recover. And worse yet, she's contributing to helping other people fall into the same pit of despair and disgrace. And she will argue, like modern culture always seems to, that it's her right. And she's not going to hear anybody who dares make any judgment about her chosen path. Okay. Yep, she's got the right. I dare say the opportunity to either contribute to the good of herself and the world or to contribute to the damage to herself and the world. And she's choosing the latter. She is choosing to damage herself and the world. And the more she argues about the good she's doing, the more I am made to realize and to understand just how low we are able to go in our self-delusion. Wouldn't it be great? Wouldn't it be great Wouldn't it be great if I could make $100,000 a year at OnlyFans by taking my clothes off? You know, sadder still is the question, wouldn't it be great? Wouldn't it be great if porn didn't exist? Wouldn't it be great if humanity behaved with more pride and dignity and moral goodness? Wouldn't it be great if we collectively and individually did our very best every single day? Wouldn't it be great if we could trust each other for help and support and encouragement? Wouldn't it be great if hubris weren't so prevalent in the world? Wouldn't it be great if we didn't seek ill will toward one another? Wouldn't it be great? Wouldn't it be great if we realized that God is God and we are not? Wouldn't it be great if broken people could be put back together? Wouldn't it be great if we found joy in the help that we provide other people today? And wouldn't it be great if when we were on the ground with our hand extended, someone would grab it and lift us up? Yeah, wouldn't it be great? Wouldn't it be great if the pursuit of usefulness was more important than the pursuit of money or fame? As I was preparing for today's show, as I often do, it's my habit, I have headphones on and a lot of tunes are playing. Mostly while I was working on today's show, Tom Petty's Wildflowers and All the Rest. It's this magnificent 54-track set. You can buy it over at iTunes for $30. Yeah, it's expensive, but it's 54 tracks, and every single one's worth listening to. We lost Tom back in October of 2017. You realize that? 2017. Years ago, when I was in the record business, I remember his 1979 big breakthrough with the album Damn the Torpedoes. And he and the Heartbreakers, from that time, even up till now, even post Tom's death, I mean, they've just been synonymous with guitar-based storytelling. And I'm sitting here, I'm thinking about this show, and I say to myself, wouldn't it be great if Tom was still alive making music with the Heartbreakers? And I hit play then on another album, The Caution Horses by Cowboy Junkies, Canadian guys and gals. And I'm sitting here and I'm listening to Margot Timmons, the lead female singer. I don't know, man, just listening to this record, it just makes me feel warm. And boy, do I need it, because it's cold outside. In fact, well, we might be. I haven't looked today. It is just raining. It is just snowing up a storm as I've hit the record button. Today is Sunday, by the way. Valentine's Day, February the 12th. February 12th. Hello, Randy. February 14th, 2021. And it is about 5:30 p.m. and it is snowing. It has been snowing most of the day. Just, you know, flurries here and flurries there, but it's been snowing really hard here for the last 30 minutes or so. And the temperature is just falling. And we are headed toward 8. I don't know. I haven't looked. That may be a record. Absolutely may be a record. Single digit temperatures are just not common around here. They're common where Margot and Cowboy Junkies are from up in Canada, but I'm listening to her sing this record and I do feel warm. And I'm thinking about that wreck and I'm thinking about this sixth person. I'm thinking about they've identified 5 of the 6 killed. And I'm thinking, wouldn't it be great if that wreck hadn't happened? It wrecked more than cars. It wrecked more than trucks, because I know that this weekend lots of families were wrecked by this thin sheet of black ice on a highway. Some wouldn't it be great if questions, they have obvious answers, others not so much. I've long thought about this one question, and I think I'm sure that I've talked about it before here. What if you were just one decision away from fixing everything? Wouldn't it be great if that were true? Oh, wait a minute. It is. It is true. What if you were just one decision away from fixing everything? Well, okay. It's worth considering it more deeply. I mean, wouldn't it be great if you were just one decision away from fixing something? I mean, forget trying to fix everything. How about we just focus on fixing something, maybe the most important something? My day job is helping leaders, helping people at a really personal level. It's not just professional. It's personal, because we often delve into their private lives as they confide challenges and obstacles that, well, they'd like some help to figure out. The work is therapeutic. It's always therapeutic. It's not therapy. I'm not a therapist. But it's safe. It's supportive. It's encouraging. And it's very, very common for the process to involve many discussions about decisions because the work is transformational. My clients, you see, are high performers because slackers don't invest in this kind of work. No, they don't pay to be challenged. They don't pay to be improved by coaching. And neither do bosses invest in slackers. It's funny how that works. Well, in work that transforms, people want to fix. They want to fix what ails them. And it starts with one thing. I don't think any client has ever said to me, I'd like to fix this and then that and then this other thing. And oh, yeah, then there are these five other things. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that they don't have multiple things, but I haven't had that conversation with any high achiever that I've ever coached. Because high achievers, they're more focused than that. They're capable of being preoccupied with a single thing at a time, and usually the most important thing, at least the most important thing to them in that moment. What if a single decision, one decision, could make a great difference? I mean, wouldn't it be great? Wouldn't it be great if a single decision could make a big difference? Well, you already know that's possible because it's already happened to you. Yes. Come on. You're not thinking. Think about it. It's happened to you. Probably happened to you a lot. You made a decision, and it had a great impact on your life. Just shortly after I turned 18, I asked a girl from Fort Worth, Texas on a date. I never dated another girl after that. Not quite 3 years later, we got married. It didn't last. Our marriage has lasted over 43 years. It's still going strong. We just didn't stay young very long. We're still very in love. We're just not very young. I mean, who knew? Who knew that a single decision to ask a girl on a date would completely change my life? 18-year-old me did not know that. Who knew that decision would be among the single greatest decisions I ever made? I read this somewhere. I'm sure I did, because I'm not clever enough to come up with it on my own. And I would have no way to know if this is true or not. It's one of those kind of statements that you read it and you just assume that somebody smart came up with it and researched it. And it seems reasonable to me, though. And here it is. It takes 4 weeks for you to see your body changing. It has to do with fitness and diet and all that. It takes 4 weeks for you to see your body changing. It takes 8 weeks for your friends and family to see it. It takes 12 weeks for the rest of the world to notice. Think of it. In just 3 months, the rest of the world will notice. Get going. I like that, don't you? I think it's inspiring. Yeah, I can hear people right now say, well, of course it's inspiring. It's pure rubbish, but I don't think so. In just 3 months, the rest of the world will notice. What decisions have you made that changed one thing? I mean, I don't know. Maybe like me, you made a decision that changed everything. Wouldn't it be great if we knew in advance? Well, maybe not. Maybe not, because maybe the weight of the decision that would just paralyze us. I mean, if 18-year-old me knew, okay, yes, this girl out. I mean, this is gonna change your life forever. If I knew that, I probably just wouldn't have gone out on a date that night. Wouldn't it be great? Wouldn't it be great if in just 3 months, people outside our inner circle noticed improvements, changes in our appearance, our behavior, our performance? I mean, wouldn't that be great? 3 months? You kidding me? In 3 months, 12 weeks, 90 days? Well, it would be great if we could find the path forward. That'd be great. It'd be great if we could find a path to becoming better. And I don't mean better looking or more fit or more well off financially, although, yeah, those would be pretty terrific. I mean, what if we really became better people? I mean, wouldn't that be great? Wouldn't it be great if we behaved better? But of course, that's only possible if we can somehow find a path forward to thinking better. And I'm not talking about improving our smartness. I'm not talking about elevating our IQ. Is that even possible? I mean, wouldn't it be great if we thought it was worthwhile to behave with greater moral integrity? Wouldn't it be great if we believed that improved humility to recognize God would be beneficial? Wouldn't it be great if we had enough dedication to put in the work to improve our character? Yeah, I know. I can hear you right now saying, yeah, dude, dream on. Jordan Peterson, I am a longtime fan. He observes and he admonishes, you need to think through how your life could be properly arranged if you had abilities you may now lack. You need to think through how your life could be properly arranged if you had abilities you may now lack. Yeah, I mean, dude's a big shot smarty pants. I've got to really focus to even begin to try to keep up. He's smart, he's studied, he's insightful. He declares that if we make that our goal and we move toward it, as a therapist, I'm not, he is, who has spent thousands and thousands and thousands of hours coaching and consulting clients, people always move closer to it. Things inevitably get better when we think through how our lives could be properly arranged if we had abilities that we may not right now have. And it's not about happiness. He argues rather successfully, I think, it's not about happiness. It's about meaning. It's about transforming into better people. And it's difficult. It's hard. It's arduous work. But we mostly, as humans, he argues, we love it because, well, we're wired for it. We want to be challenged in all the best ways. You know, the problem with challenging, as an aside here, the problem with challenging people is mostly we are challenged by people who are harshly judgmental. We are not challenged by people that are safe. There's the rub. Those people who challenge us because we know, we are absolutely convinced they have our best interests at heart, we love it. It's super rewarding. Very, very short. At the very beginning, like session 2, maybe 3, in my coaching practice, clients inevitably look at me and say, why haven't I done this sooner? And there's just this light bulb moment, and it's so great. It's just terrific. And it happens 100% of the time, by the way. It's like, and I'll tell you when it happens. It happens, I'm pretty good at building and establishing trust right away because I just don't violate it. But after 2 or 3 sessions, I've had enough time to prove it. And after I've had enough time to prove it is when the light bulb moment happens. Because in that moment, these people realize I'm sitting here with somebody who absolutely has got nobody's best interest but my own. And sadly, many, if not most, or perhaps all, come to the conclusion I have to pay for that. Now, I'm a business guy, and I want more clients, and I believe in earning what I'm worth, but there is also something very sad about that, isn't it? I mean, something sad about we are surrounded by people, and largely people feel like they are surrounded by people that mostly are not safe, people who have some other agenda other than just your very best. Wouldn't it be great? Wouldn't it be great if you had people in your life that just wanted the very best for you? They just wanted you to be the very best person you could possibly be. Well, I think about Dr. Peterson, and his brilliance, and the fact that we mostly love to be challenged in all the best ways because we are wired for that. And then I wonder, why then do people chase happiness? Why do people chase security in sameness? Why are some people so resistant to change? Why are some people so resistant to even the mere quest to improve? Fear? We get scared, maybe. I mean, even in our difficulties. He argues, and I think he's probably right, that it's the devil we know versus the one we don't, that we probably too often presume that the devil we know must be better than the one we don't, and he's probably right. I suspect we are mostly wrong about that. We may be guilty of making an invalid comparison between two devils without considering that we could be choosing a devil over an angel, or maybe we could rethink this thing and we could choose instead the angel over the devil. What I love about the wouldn't it be great if question is the optimism. Because nobody says, wouldn't it be great if things didn't work out? I mean, the fact that we're considering something that would be great means that we are thinking of an ideal outcome. And you know how fond I am of the ideal outcome. Man, I even registered the domain, theidealoutcome.com. Nobody answers, no, that wouldn't be great. I'm sitting here looking at this 16th sixth hole, rather, the sixth green of this golf course, and I'm saying to my wife, man, wouldn't it be great? Wouldn't it be great if we had a place here? And she goes, yeah, it'd be great. She didn't say, no, that wouldn't be great at all. We don't say that when we're asking these kind of questions. Now, other people might say that. Other people, I might could have asked the same question of somebody else and who doesn't even like a place such as the place where I was at the time and say, oh, no, it'd be awful. Be awful. I'd much rather be up in the mountains in the snow and to each his own and all that. Well, that's why it's our ideal outcome. It's not their ideal outcome. What are you thinking right now? What are your wouldn't it be great if questions? This past week was pretty typical for me in that I had a number of conversations with people who were facing difficulties and challenges. It was not unusual in that regard, nor was it unusual for them to share these things with me because, after all, it's what I do. It's who I am. But in preparing for this episode, I reflected on the nature of the challenges. And they're broad, and you're not going to be surprised by any of them. Health, family, relationships, teams, superiors, subordinates, schedules, productivity. Just goes on and on and on. Problems from A to Z. Problems in their own lives. Problems in making choices about what they should do. Problems in trying to help other people figure out choices. Sometimes in my professional coaching practice, I will ask a client to craft a wouldn't it be great if question. And I want them to take that question and aim it squarely at their challenge, squarely at their problem. There's power in the singularity of the question, but what comes next, that's really where the power is. Because now we have to answer the how of the question. I assume the direct answer to the question is, well, yes, yes, it would be great, or else we wouldn't be asking the what if or wouldn't it be great if question. Wouldn't it be great if we won $1 million? Well, sure, but we're powerless to influence how. So it really is just a dreamlike, fantasy-filled question. It's really meaningless. Okay, well, not exactly, because frankly, it's pretty meaningful, actually, because it fosters covetousness, which always damages us. When the aim of it is self-indulgence. You know, let's covet wisdom. Let's covet compassion. Let's covet integrity. Let's covet other qualities that can make us better humans. So we answer, yes, it would be great. It would be great if our ideal outcome were achieved in this, in that, or the other. But how? How? There's the rub. General George Patton, he lived by one motto that I'm pretty fascinated by. Quotes anyway, and the source of those quotes. Always take the offensive, never dig in. In war and life, he always pursued forward progress. For General Patton, standing still was unacceptable. The pursuit of the ideal outcome meant a degree of constant dissatisfaction. Complacency, it was his enemy. And frankly, it probably should be our enemy as well. What if we were able to take the offensive in achieving our wouldn't it be great if dreams? What if we figured out how? And what if we then committed ourselves to it? Experience has taught me the power of sticking with it long enough in order to figure it out more clearly. I know. I'm impatient as the next guy. But almost never is success fast. And certainly hardly is it ever instant. And frequently, our first how strategies, they prove miserably, miserably ineffective. My life testifies to that. Maybe yours does, too. I think if we're lucky, our very first how strategies, they might just prove slightly, slightly correct. And so we adjust, right? We just keep aiming. We keep aiming at that ideal outcome. But the first few steps, they just don't seem to end up taking us where we plan to go. And so we move a little bit, we pivot, we iterate, and then we wait. Okay, let's see how that works. We see, we feel, we sense progress or not. We figure out, are we advancing? Is this working better than that last thing I tried? Yeah. Okay. Well, if so, then we're encouraged to keep, okay, well then let's keep going in this direction because this is working out way better than that first thing we tried. And maybe we push even harder now that we know things are, hey, this seems to be working. Setting the noble goal and pushing toward it makes things, it makes us better. Boring is digging in, not advancing, not taking any chances, not pursuing anything difficult. Wouldn't it be great if the moment, the power of the moment, I got to talk about this. I don't know why this has been on my mind lately. Well, yeah, I do, because I've had a lot of conversations about quotes. In fact, my podcasting partner, Leo Batari, and I, we do a podcast over at peernovation.co, and he wanted to do a show one day on quotes, and we did. And I got to thinking about this quote. You know it. You've read it before. Until one is committed, there is hesitancy, the chance to draw back, always ineffectiveness. Concerning all acts of initiative and creation, there is one elementary truth, the ignorance of which kills countless ideas and splendid plans, that the moment one definitely commits oneself, then providence moves too. All sorts of things occur to help one that would never otherwise have occurred. A whole stream of events issues from the decision, raising in one's favor all manner of unforeseen incidents, meetings, and material assistance, which no man could have dreamed would have come his way. Whatever you can do or dream you can, begin it. Boldness has genius, power, and magic in it. Begin it now. That quote by William Hutchison Murray was a longtime favorite of mine for many, many years, but no more. And mostly because I learned that people were viewing those words through a very different lens than the one that I had always viewed it through. I don't make any apologies for it. I'm a Christian. And I have never viewed that quote as meaning that we mere mortals have the power to bend the universe to our will. My belief in God forbids any person from seeing these or any other words as human power to attract whatever we want. You know, that law of attraction and The Secret. Rubbish. Delusions of man-made thinking, primarily thinking that we are our own God, able to do as we please, as though our path forward is through our self-centered hubris. No, I never looked at it through that lens. No wonder Dr. Peterson speaks so frequently against our malevolence, ill will, hatred, spite, pleasure in the suffering, pleasure in the injury of other people. The principles spoken of in that quote, though, by Mr. Murray, they're really powerful. I still like them, just not as much as I used to. But more so are they powerful in the context of our human capacity to influence our own lives, which is completely congruent with God's divine word. I mean, here are the powerful words of that quote, words like commitment, hesitancy, drawing back, okay, it's two, ineffectiveness, initiative, creation, ignorance, ideas, plans, providence, decision, favor, unforeseen incidents, meetings, material assistance, dreams, begin, boldness, genius, power, magic, and perhaps the most powerful one of all, now we're getting somewhere. Maybe it's our first time, maybe not. But it's progress if we're internalizing the quest when we ask and we answer the question of, wouldn't it be great if, and we follow that by the pronoun I, and we follow that still by an action verb, or perhaps some outcome that's nobler than just some selfish desire, like, wouldn't it be great if I was a social media star? Or wouldn't it be great if I were a millionaire? Wouldn't it be great? Wouldn't it be great if I were so valuable that my work was deemed worth $1 million by other people? Wouldn't it be great if we had a vacation home here? Versus, wouldn't it be great if we were able to have a place here so that other people could enjoy this as much as we do, the people that we love the most? Man, they might enjoy it more. Once in a while, I have a conversation with people about podcasting because, well, I do so much of it. And people clamor for an audience. They clamor for greater numbers. Podcasters, we're notorious. You know, we want more subscribers and more people. I mean, somebody emailed me the other day asking, you know, what kind of subscribers, what kind of listener base have you got? You know, and they wanted some hard numbers. We're fixated on it. You know, more listeners, more subscribers, greater numbers, more shares on social media, more likes, more acknowledgement on a job well done. I find that people are mostly disappointed when I tell them that I've been doing this for more than 20 years and I really have very little idea about these kinds of things. And I just don't care. I don't know. I currently produce 3 podcasts regularly. You're listening to one of them. likely my favorite. And there are two that are mostly business related. And those have a desired outcome. And that desired outcome is just greater exposure to business services, but really more plainly and frankly more to the truth of it. The quest is to get more clients, but really it is to differentiate myself from the pack who isn't out there giving away information and ideas and insights and sharing experiences and doing it without reservation, not thinking twice about, well, I don't know, I might ought to hold this back and make people pay for this. It's just not the way I roll. Yeah, I certainly want to expand the reach of this and my other podcast. It's not because I'm so important. It certainly isn't because I feel like what I have to say or what I think should carry more weight than anybody else. I mean, no, 1,000 times no. It's because I'm confident that a word fitly spoken at the right time, that it just might resonate with somebody, and it might resonate with you, and it might. I'm not saying it'll make all the difference in the world. I'm not putting that much pressure on it, but it might make some difference. One day a man was walking along the beach when he noticed a boy picking up and gently throwing things into the ocean. Approaching the boy, he asked, "Young man, what are you doing?" The boy replied, "Throwing starfish back into the ocean. The surf is up and the tide's going out. If I don't throw them back, they'll die." The man laughed to himself and said, "Do you realize there are miles and miles of beach and hundreds of starfish? You can't make any difference." After listening politely, the boy bent down, picked up another starfish, threw it into the surf, and then smiling at the man, he said, "I made a difference to that one. Wouldn't it be great? Wouldn't it be great if I could help you in a moment where you just needed it the most? Wouldn't it be great if you could help me in a way where I just needed it most?" I live my life like that little boy, combing the beaches of life, trying to just help save some washed ashore starfish, trying to make a difference to just one. Because for me, that is enough. Because you see, I don't care about scope and scale, because I'm sitting here thinking, wouldn't it be great? Wouldn't it be great if just one person listening got something of value, something that could make a positive difference for them just today? And if that starfish happens to be you, well, then it makes all the difference in the world. I appreciate you listening. You have heard Episode 5, Season 2021 of Leaning Toward Wisdom. You can find the show notes over at the website leaningtowardwisdom.com. It is Modern Tales of an Ancient Pursuit. I'm going to hawk last week. If you want to hear a snarky Englishman, and I just, the more I listen to the guy play his music, the more I just love the guy. I mean, Frank is it's terrific. If you didn't catch it, let me encourage you to go back and catch it. Because Frank and I, part of the conversation that we had that I left out of the podcast was kind of thematic of today's show. You know, here's Frank and he's doing this music. And he and I had a conversation. We've continued an email conversation about just all the depression in the world. How people are just so down and out. And how he hopes that he's helping in some small way, and I have assured him he is. As content creators, it can be horribly lonely work, and we do it because we love it. Frank is doing it because he loves it. He's got great interaction through comments over at YouTube. I less so. But we're birds of a feather in the sense it still really is about one starfish at a time. Thank you. Thank you for being maybe one of the starfish. I hope you're not washed ashore. And if you are, I hope I'm able to help. I can tell you occasionally I get washed ashore, so I could use the help too. Greetings and welcome inside the Yellow Studio.